Get ready for the Girls on Games podcast, your weekly dose of news, reviews, and everything video games. Always served with a good helping of hype and just a pinch of salt. And now, your host, Leah.
Welcome to another Girls on Games podcast. My name is Leah. I'm the host of this show. This is episode number 440. And on the show this week, we're looking at the targeted harassment campaign of Montreal Sweet Baby Inc. Is it Gamergate 2.0? I have questions. So we're going to get into that. But before we do so, I want to introduce you to the friendly voices around this digital table. Catherine, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. Joelle, how are you? Bye. Joelle, what's up?
Hey. You know, it was such a busy day. Today is crazy. And apparently it does. The craziness never stops.
We're
going to No rest for the wicked.
Yes,
to Goofy Town. That's where we're going. Hang on.
Oh, yeah. We are full steam ahead to Goofy Town. All right, let's get through some housekeeping. I'd like to remind you that if you enjoy this show, you can subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Podbean. If you'd like to get some GOG merch, you can do that by going to designbyhumans.com/shop/girlsongames. Or if you'd like to give us a tip, maybe buy us a coffee, you can do that by going to our Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/girlsongames. Ladies, I have, like, my project's not done yet, so I'm, like, full tilt, just been working like a dog, it's been busy, haven't even had a lot of time to game, and I'm hoping I can live vicariously through you. Catherine, what have you been at this week, girl?
We kind of kept it quiet, too. Ran some errands, because in 2 weeks I'm flying off to Europe.
Yes!
So it's some last minute errands to get stuff for the trip, and then on Friday we did our session when we play the Old Gods of Appalachia tabletop RPG. I think I've mentioned it. It's based on the podcast. Pascal made a game for myself, Simon, Harry, Albin, and Sarah. So we're getting together about once a month to play right now because we're doing it IRL. So it's really nice. But now we got to wait until we come back from our trip to Amsterdam to keep playing. But yeah, that was that's pretty much it. Other than that, I had an appointment with my kinesiologist to keep working on my program so that I can eventually go back to lifting. Clearly, they are trying to kill my legs. At first, I looked at it and I was like, you know, it's a lot of body weight stuff. Obviously, like, we're working on, like, mobility, equilibrium, you know, because I'm still healing. But honestly, like, I did this program, like, today and yesterday. And, like, today when I was doing, like, the split squat lunges, like, where I have to go down, like, they were like, you have to take, like, a good 4 seconds to do the whole movement. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, halfway through, my legs were just like, bitch, what? Like, you think you're strong, right? You think you got it until somebody's like, hey, can you hold it for 30 seconds or can you just like take 4 seconds to go down and then 4 seconds to go back up? And you're like,
yeah,
questioning your life choices.
That's what they always say when doing like a lot of the weights and stuff. You're not supposed to go fast. You're supposed to like really
very
go slow
because
that's what gets you. When you think about it, you're like, but like you're not optimizing your time, right? That's my logic, right? Speed, efficiency, but no,
exactly.
It's not that.
No, because you're using the momentum. Because like you're kind of allowing the momentum to help you, and they're like, oh no, you have to no momentum. Yeah.
No, and it's like that's how you'll ruin like all of your joints, honestly, because the joints they need to be loaded like very progressively, like muscle bits faster, but joints no. So you have to stress them a different way. So, and it's like I used to do like real push-ups or like the traditional push-ups, but like of course I lost a lot of it. So I was doing it on my knees, and now they were like, you're going through that, whatever. So what they have me do is you go up on your knees, and then you get on your feet, and then you go down into a full like standard push-up, and they're like, and as you go down, count 1, 2,
Oh, God.
Three.
And don't fall on your face and break your nose.
I already and know I'm done.
I'm just like, because I was telling them, like, it's good, the knee push-ups, but I feel they're working, like, mostly, like, my shoulders and my arms and whatever. But it's like, I don't feel like the chest is as engaged. They're like, no, no, that's fine. It's like, the knee push-ups is to build the arms so that the arms can support you and then you can work the chest. I was like, cool. So they had me do that. And my pectoral, my pecs on fire, burning. I haven't had them burn since that time I tried to like bench 120 pounds, I think. And I was just like, and it's just my body weight. But they're like, remember, one, two, three, and land. I'm just like, oh, God. No, no. So I am humbled by my training program. But
yeah. That's good. You always want to be able to like do that next step to make it a little bit harder to show those swole gains.
Yeah. And honestly, a lot of stuff that made the difference is a lot of stuff that they're having me do like either for equilibrium, like just stuff like standing on the leg, on one leg with your eyes closed for 30 seconds without falling over. That's a lot of like muscle control.
Yeah.
Like just from like all the way to like your head down to your leg. They had me do that and I was like, wow. But I got to do that shit if I want to recover, if I want my leg to be normal again.
Yeah.
Because although it was a back injury, because of the sciatica, like the leg is completely fucked.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was my week. Just a lot of.
On the board game thing, I picked up a board game that I haven't played yet, but my intention is once I'm back from Mexico to have my sister and brother-in-law up. Mm-hmm. I think it's a board game that you'd be interested in. I saw it on TikTok and then went and bought it on Amazon. It's called Hues and Clues.
Okay.
And you essentially have a huge board with a like rainbow grid on it. And the question will be, put your piece on chartreuse. Put your piece on periwinkle. And I was like, oh, man.
Crush at this game.
And then it gives you like this grid, and it's all like mapped out and gridded, right? Like just like a Cartesian bread almost grid. And then it gives you the numbers that you have to put the little card over. And if you're inside it, I guess that's how you get the points.
Wow.
So I think this will be a fun board game to play with my husband, sister, and brother-in-law.
The number of time Pascal went, this is green, or this is blue, and I'm like, it's not. And he's like, tell me it's not blue. I'm like, it's half blue, so it's green, and I'm like, it's half green. It's teal.
It's teal.
Which is like equal parts blue and green. So it's a blue-green, so it's teal. It's just like, we argue about colors. At one point, he pointed something, and he was like, see, it's purple. I'm like, no, it's not purple. It's maroon.
Or magenta.
Has he never seen a crayon box?
Cerulean? Scarlet? Yeah. This is where I think it's going to be fascinating, because I don't think people... The color name that drives me bananas the most is when people call things khaki.
Yeah. Oh. Well, it's army green.
Yeah, but khakis are also a thing, right?
Yeah, like, they're a style. So,
it's, so I think
khaki pants were traditionally khaki colored.
Yes.
Exactly. Well,
it's, I say it's army green, but it's actually like more of a...
It's more brown side.
It's half beige, half army green.
Yeah.
So it's khaki.
It's khaki. Khaki.
Yeah.
So this is why this is going to be such a fun game. And like, it's going to be hilarious. And I actually said to my sister, I was like, you guys are both good with colors, right? Because you can't play this game if you're colorblind unless you have the association where it's messed up. Like, I guess you've interpreted it enough that you can't tell the difference. But like, what it looks like to you is not what it looks like to everybody else. But that's just optics, right? So how do you know, right?
But the problem
I know
with...
what green looks like to me, but doesn't necessarily look the same green to you. So.
But it also depends on the type of colorblindness, because some of them will compress the shade range. Because I had a colleague who was colorblind, and like he couldn't tell the difference between like different hues of blue. He could see blue, but he was like between indigo and navy. He could not see the subtlety of the fact that like an indigo had way more red than a navy, because like he didn't have that range. So for that one, he'd be like, probably he would see the grid and be like, half, like, this corner of the grid looks like just the same color to me. I guess it's a good way to test if you get those colorblind correcting glasses.
Yeah.
Good way to test if they work.
True. So yeah, I'll report back once we go to play the game. I might do a dry run or something with Mike at some point, just so that I know the, how the rules work before, like, they come over and play. We've had a swally or two and start playing. But yeah, I picked it up. And I'm not going to lie, I was also attracted to the fact that the board is a nice, big, bright, beautiful rainbow.
Listen.
I love color. I love color.
Yeah. Color is the joy of life.
It's true. I love color. Everybody makes fun of me for my love for RGB lights, but there's a reason for it. It's because I'm addicted, like, to color.
It's called addiction to happiness. That's what it's called. Yes.
So bright and cool.
It's called loving fun. If I have a story from work, if I may. You know, I went on this stream for For Honor, and I was wearing, like, a baseball shirt that had bright red sleeves, and red is terrible to photography. So the color balance on the camera was off because my friends, my other UI friends who looked at the stream because they were like, our friend, were like, the first thing they noticed is, like, why are your sleeves red in one and orange in the other? And I was just like, I threw off Max's color balance because he probably, because he uses, like, the couch as a way to color balance. And everybody shows up in a fucking black game dev t-shirt or whatever. And, like, our,
not Catherine,
our team hoodie is, like, navy and sand. Right. And I show up and he's like, what the fuck is this shirt? And I was like, oh, it's just some old, like, For Honor merch. I wore it because it has the original three heroes and we're, like, announcing Last Hero Standing, and, you know, nostalgia, and they were like, so concept, but the red sleeves.
get her a coat.
The red sleeves.
Red is always, like, it's also the hardest color to keep in your hair because it's the biggest molecule, and it's always the worst compressed.
Yeah,
it's always the first one to go garbage when you compress it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of his cameras was too warm. Basically, the only reason we found out is because I showed up, my colorful ass showed up wearing something else than a black or gray or navy blue shirt.
They should be, like, thanking you because you caught a problem. So
I will notice something that, like, when I walk into work, you know, into my very game dev job, that, like, sometimes I'm the only one wearing bright colors. However, when we had the internal conference, the Ubisoft Developers Conference, they had, like, they made sweatshirt that you could buy for, like, $20 to commemorate. They had, like, forest green, and I bought the red one. It's, like, almost like a wine red, but a bright wine red, like, you know. So they're very colorful. So I started walking into work seeing a lot of people wearing green and red because of those. And I was like, see, if you do colorful merch, and you don't have to do, like, I know one year they did, like, the bright neon highlighter yellow toque.
Which made you get me one. And I still have it. I love it.
But, you know, and, you know, sometimes people are like, what do I do with this? But it's like, you can get colors that are in, are neutral adjacent, and, like, I find, like, forest green is one of the best ones. Like how, like, navy blue and brown and beige are neutral colors, but, like, you can just go a bit into the blue and you just get enough saturation and a bit brightness and a bit, you know, just kind of dip a bit into periwinkle and you'll get, like, bit more color, like, we can sneak in, she says, as she is recording a podcast from her lime green office. TLDR, we love color on the Girls on Games.
We do. And there's color all over our assets, yet it kind of still sits on black, because black is flattering.
But it's like, when we figured accent colors, we were like, yes. We basically took
the,
like,
rainbow.
A highlighter pack that you would get, like, at, like, the, what is it called? Staples.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we were like, this is it. Like, we're grabbing an orange, a blue, a yellow, a green, and a purple. And this is going to be our accent colors for the website.
It's essentially my gaming PC right now, which is black with rainbow running throughout it and lights. So, yeah. Yay for RGB. Joelle, what were you at this week?
Oh, man. I didn't do too much, and I was very excited. I mostly played video games. I felt it was amazing. It has been, I think this is the first weekend since my boyfriend has moved in, where I just kind of played video games the majority of the time, and it was amazing. I was nice. Like, sorry, but I want to do this. This is what I want to do. I want to do this. So yeah, I got some good gaming time in.
Sweet.
Yeah, I'm just like ran errands and did the nothing too crazy. So yeah,
cool. Like I said, not much here. I did end up doing Saturday when I was shopping with my sister, and that's when I ended up picking up the game and ordered it, and it came in today. Nice. Let's look at Fantasy Critic. I'm just curious now to see. I think a lot of the stuff actually comes out this week, like later in the week, such as Dragon Dogma 2, Rise of the Ronin, Princess Peach Showtime. How are there three games all coming out on the 22nd?
I know, there's so many games coming out.
Holy smokes, I can't even talk right now. And each of us has one. I have Dragon's Dogma, Kat has Rise of the Ronin, and you, Joelle, have Princess Peach, so that should be interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any... I don't think any of the reviews are out yet on any of those.
They're not for Rise of the Ronin or for Princess Peach, because I did look those up. You know, and it's interesting because, like, Rise of the Ronin and Dragon's Dogma, I don't think are, like, short games. Mm. So I just
Dragon
like-
Dogma definitely isn't.
Yeah, so like if you want to try to play them, I was thinking about this. I was like, I bet I could probably, like, I still want to play Princess Peach. So I'm like, mm-hmm. Right, how am I gonna? I gotta balance.
Yeah,
I gotta
time.
Juggle. I
what
know.
Is that time? Well, at least we got a long weekend coming up. Not this weekend, but the week next week.
You
next weekend.
Do.
Don't you get Easter?
No.
That must be a Canadian thing. Good Friday. I'm going to put Friday off.
We, like, in the States, they do a lot of this, like, float holiday business.
Because of different religions. Makes
of
all sense.
The, yeah. So, like, they don't usually give standard.
We're still very standard Christian.
Yeah.
Well, it's just because it's, like, it's roped into, like, federal bank. Let's call them bank holidays,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, bank
and
holidays.
Then they're like, well, the bank's closed. No one can work. You know?
Yeah. So no, I still work. I was just thinking about that today. I'm like, I probably should take a little bit more time off, and I got to figure out when I'm going to do that. Mm. But yeah.
When it comes to action, when it comes to acquiring games for folks' catalog, Joelle, you managed to pick up two last week.
Yeah.
You got The Alters with a bid of $5 and Tales of Kenzera Zao with a bid of $5. So good on you. One of them's coming soon. The Alters, I think, is coming later in the year, though, right?
It says first half of 2024 estimate. That was from the developers. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
I thought it was a safe pick.
I'm curious about that. Now everybody's like, after we were talking about it in the podcast last week, and folks were like sharing stuff with me on Discord, I was like, I am intrigued. Let's see here now in the community. We've got Pat in first, Darth in second, me in third, Offshore in fourth, Jessica in fifth, Ross in sixth, Phoenix in seventh, Alban is 8th, Dainsby Kingsby is in 8th, and then Zagpow is in 10th, because we got a tie for 8th. Some folks, MLB The Show 24 is coming. Alone in the Dark is coming this week. There's a lot of games coming this week, along with Rise of the Ronin, Dragon's Dogma 2, Peach, Princess Peach Showtime. It's a busy-ass time.
Nobody picked up MLB The Show in the Girls on Games like podcast one.
No, I haven't.
We slept on MLB The Show.
I know. That's rare of us. Mm-hmm. That's weird. Okay, I'm still flipping through here to see if any new games that we haven't talked about that people have gotten points for. No, I think everything here. We had a little bit of a lull for a bit of games coming out. Yeah, that's it. Let's see if anybody picked anything up. People's catalogs are really filling up there, too. Or their publisher lineup. would be the better way to call it. Okay, there's been a little bit of movement here. So Art Vandelay Publishing, I'm pretty sure that's Darth. He picked up The Altars with a bid of $9. Apple Orchard Games picked up, tried to get The Altars for $8, but was outbid by Darth with $9. Apple Orchard also managed to get Sleight of Hand for a bid of $6. Ooh. And Real Game Media, which I think is Pat, tried to get The Altars with a bid of $8. Man, The Altars is popular. People think that game's going to do well. So that's good. I like that. So that's a community fantasy critic. Games-wise, ladies, it sounds like we're just continuing on with what we've been playing. Catherine, Coral Island going well. Have you picked someone to romance?
Yeah, I still love bombing. I still can't afford to upgrade my house anyway to ask somebody to marry me, so.
Okay. All right.
I'm working on it. Listen, like, I'm wrapping up spring. Summer's a big season.
It is.
Fall as well. Once I've wrapped through this year, I will unlock my greenhouse thanks to the offerings, because I got the seeds I was missing for the flowers for my winter bundle. And they were like, hey, you can plant them in the spring. And I'm like, you gave them to me. There's 5 days left to spring. I'm like,
rude.
Yeah. And then once you get the greenhouse, and I've upgraded both my coop and my barn, and now I'm like, you know, ranching is good money. Yep. And I'm just like, all right, just gotta remember to go every day in the forest and get my hardwood, and pretty soon I'm gonna have a big house, find a spouse,
but also exactly.
I've also been kind of like focusing on Coral Island, not really starting anything else, because since I'm leaving in 2 weeks for 2 weeks, I'm like, you know, at least Coral Island, it's simple enough that I just open the thing and I'm just kind of like looking at things. I'm just guess I'll go grow some vegetables and milk my cows, and then I'll eventually remember where I was at. You know, like, it's fine. Like, if I were to relaunch Assassin's Creed Mirage, I would be like, I can parry in this game? How? So I'm just going to post this until I go to Europe.
I'm waiting for all that new content that they're talking about. As soon as that drops, then I'll jump back in again. Because, I was at, like, the tail end of stuff. And I'm just moving on to other things because the grind is real.
Yeah. It is very grindy.
It is real.
But,
it can be real grindy after a while.
Yeah, but because I'm, like, right now, like, what I'm doing at work is very, like, brain juice consuming. It's nice to just open the game and like, pretty colors, pretty people you could kiss, grow some trees. I'm like, yes, thank you.
I feel you. I totally feel you. I am really curious to talk to Joelle. Are you allowed to talk about Rise of the Ronin now?
Yes, I can talk about the first part of the game.
How do you feel? What's it like? Are you enjoying it?
Yes. So I will say that this is impressive. Like, I know the game was in development for a hot minute, like 10 years, you know, it was in development for a really long time. But I will say that I don't know what you can't do in this game. There's a lot of stuff. Really? Starting off with, when you boot it up, you get into this highly detailed character customization. And it is stacked. Like, it did remind me of like Dragon Age a bit. Just like, you can like hundreds of hair types, skin shades, faces, bodies, all these different things. There's no genitalia, so like, it's not, you know, it's not a cyberpunk, so that was slightly disappointing after, you know, 10 years of work, Team Ninja. But you can basically just create anything you'd like. Like, it's very, very fun, and you could spend 4 hours designing your character right there. And I will say that the first part of the game, the tutorial and intro, is very fun. It kind of grips you right away with the story. You're essentially an assassin, part of an assassin group you're a part of the Veiled Edge, is what it's called, and you have a twin blade that you are partnered with. And so you, that story is set, and it's set in Japan in the year of the shogunate. Let me try to find the year. So it's basically Japan is opening itself up to Western influences, and you know, in the arms race, in the arms trade. So bringing Western weapons and war mechanics to Japan.
So same era as like The Last Samurai, Blue Eye Samurai.
Yes, Blue Eye Samurai. Yes, which that show is so good.
It's amazing.
So it's really in like that vein, and it's very much a pick your story adventure, which is fun. And I will say that after the tutorial, I'd say the game really slowed down for me a bit, where I was a little unsure of where things were going. But then it has me in its grip. Like, I cannot wait to finish the story. It like really, really took off. And there's a few more mechanics that I can't share yet, but we'll get into next week. I am 75% done with the game.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I said I gamed all weekend.
And yeah. You sat on that couch You gave it your all.
I did. And I just, like I said, I kind of slipped into a phase where I was like, I have to one more chapter. One more chapter, and then it was like already like 7 o'clock at night, and I started at like 10. And I'm like, I better do something else for
drink some water, get a meal, stand up, walk around, stretch.
Yeah, we did go for a walk outside. He's like, we should go for a walk outside, and I was like, okay, so
fine,
I did that. But yeah,
fresh air.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to. To concluding for the game, because it turned into a lot of fun.
So. Joelle, I've heard some comparisons, and obviously were you saying that you like you're an assassin with a dual blade, Assassin's Creed kind of references. Are you feeling that vibe for those of us that really like the Assassin's Creed?
Oh yeah. They've been saying it's the game has taken the best mechanics of a bunch of games and throw it into one big pot. That's exactly what it is.
Okay, so along with Assassin's Creed, what would you put in the mix?
I'd put in the
that
mix.
That you're allowed to talk about.
Yeah, so I'd put in the mix. So they've been really Team Ninja has been really public about using Ghost of Tsushima as a really large inspiration.
Makes a lot of sense.
And you see that. You see that like almost at every turn. A little bit of Ninja Gaiden, like in some of the combat systems. You definitely, if you're big into combat, this game is for you because it is in vein with like a Sekiro or a Souls game. But thank God the gamer overlords have listened to me, and there is a difficulty setting. Ooh, yay! Ooh. So if some of those games that really focus on combat style, maybe you've wanted to shy away from, this is one to jump into because I knew I was playing this for a review. Like, I kind of set it to easy, and I have had no trouble. Like, if I was playing this casually, I probably would have ticked up the difficulty a little bit because there's a lot of combat in this game. And you get essentially four different types of weapon groups that you can use, and then sub-weapons. But your main four types of weapons has three different stances per type. So there's a lot of different combinations that you can mix with. And you kind of find your sweet spot in combat, which is great, but you definitely encounter enemies that have a totally different style of combat that makes you have to adapt because you'll be like more effective against them. So it's best to try to diversify. And the game on easy mode like doesn't punish you if you don't diversify, but I bet in other difficulty levels you're probably going to want to like try to get good at all the different stances. But yeah, the I'm really looking forward to how it ends, because then I can say, like, you could just play it for the story. But I can't say that yet because I haven't finished it. But it's very
But fun. There is the possibility that you can play it just for the story, unlike a Souls game where the story is scripted, the lore is deep, you have to read it, and the game is hard and has no UX whatsoever. Because I loved Ghost of Tsushima. So when I saw this one, I was like, Ghost of Tsushima, but like make it more Souls-like?
Yep.
Mm.
Yep.
But I don't have a PlayStation 5, so.
Yeah, it is. It's, yeah, it is on exclusive. PlayStation
5 right now.
Yep. Yeah. Which is,
Any talk of PC release?
They should. I guess I will say the graphics are not amazing. Like, which is interesting given that it's a PS5 exclusive, but I could see if they started development so long ago, they probably got a bit, you kind of lay your foundation, you got to kind of run with it a bit, I'm sure.
But like if they started making it 10 years ago.
Yeah. So like if you, Souls games, the graphics aren't, usually touted as the best thing about the game. Like Ghost of Tsushima, in my opinion, is more aesthetically pleasing to play. Like, I want to go and see everything because everything's so pretty. Mm. In this game, there's quite a bit to be desired because it really reminds me of a PS4 kind of graphic.
I've heard that. Yeah. I've heard that listening to other people speak of the game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You're not playing
it for graphics. Don't have to be everything, right? No. If the gameplay's there, the story's there, the mechanics there, like.
Yeah, and it's light. Like, in some ways, it doesn't take itself too seriously because some of the stuff is just over the top and fighting, like, kind of campy moves and silliness and things like that. And also, you can customize your character in such a specific way, which makes it fun. So you get armor, and then if you want to keep that armor look, you can, do that as you progress in the game. And there's a lot of ways to customize your character based on how you want to play the game too. And they're very, very generous with resources. At least I think I might have put on a few settings where like I automatically pick up resources as I'm galloping around the cities and the area, and and you can boost your stats where you also get more resources as you win fights, and so that's fun. So that you can kind of make it as difficult or as easy as you want, which is great because then people like all over can play it. Like then you can actually enjoy the game, and I think that's partly why I'm having a lot of fun, because you can like sneak around and to quote Leah, be sneaky, sneaky, stabby, stabby, and or you could go in like balls to the walls like I do, and have a good time. So I'm excited to do a deeper dive and roll through the whole thing next week, because that'll be out.
Fantastic, yeah. I'm curious to see what kind of like the lay of the land is on it too, because it's been a game that, like you said, it's been in development for 10 years now.
Yeah,
mind you, a lot of games are like that, but nice to finally see it. It's the same company did that Wulong Dynasty game too, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, cool. They did Wulong Dynasty, and yeah, they this is their first open world RPG. They've said. Cool. So this is kind of their first time dipping their toes in that water. I do wonder about the graphics and if it will hurt the ratings, just because a part of me is thinking, if you buy a PS5, like for a specific gaming experience, and this game really doesn't deliver on that one level, so that expectation doesn't kind of line up. Like I said, everything else has been, there's so much to do in this game.
I mean, if so people can like power through stuff like Elden Ring, that has like decent graphics, but it's like the aesthetic, like the art direction is very macabre. So everything kind of looks dull and samey because of that atmosphere, and people still enjoy the fuck out of it. I think if this game has like amazing gameplay, you know, you, so what if they didn't put in ray tracing?
Yeah.
I don't think if it's not like a big selling point, unlike, let's say, a Cyberpunk or a Superman, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say, like, in some ways, you know, Ghost of Tsushima, in my opinion, like, got a little repetitive at times because it was just like, oh, we're going to just do this kind of same thing. And I wish almost there was a little bit. I thought the story of Ghost was great. I think that already Rise of Ronin, I think the story is better. So, like I said, like, if you're interested in the story and want to play it for that, like, you're not going to be disappointed. Yeah, if you're graphically inclined and you're going to pay $70 for the game, just note that, like, it's not going to be Ghost of Tsushima. So.
Okay. Good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned, I haven't played a whole lot. Still working on Garden Life and all intentions of starting Dave the Diver right after. I think we're going to end up going for Easter to Ottawa now. So, it's a good reason for me to break out the Switch and get it ready to go before I go away to Mexico. But what I really want to do is take a walk down memory card lane. Each week the team will have to guess a historical game that would have released during the airing of this episode. We'll start with the release date. I'll give hints about the game. The team will attempt to guess what it is. As always, ladies, talk it out. All right. This game released in Japan on March 21st, 1999, and North America on July 26,
1999. The big year. The year before
mm-hmm.
the Y2K.
Yep. Yeah, that's...
Remember that?
99, that's Nintendo 64. Yep. We're still on the PlayStation 2. And we're still on the Xbox 360. But for Japan, it would probably be a Nintendo or a PlayStation title. Mm-hmm. 99.
Next clue.
Yes, please.
It was developed by HAL Laboratory and published by Nintendo.
HAL Laboratory. Okay. It could also be a DS game, eh? Is it Brain Age?
No. Was DS out in 99?
No. I think 99 was the Advance, Game Boy Advance.
Yeah. Maybe? My handheld knowledge is...
Yeah, I skipped...
Limited.
I got a Game Boy Advance because Pascal had a Game Boy Advance, but even by then it was, like, old.
You want another hint?
Yeah.
It originally started development as a Nintendo 64 DD game. Do you remember the Nintendo 64 DD?
Oh.
The disc drive?
Oh!
Yeah! Remember that thing that, like, sold like shit?
Which eventually became the GameCube.
Yeah, I think that was the next step.
The GameCube was not out in 99.
Mm-mm. No, it's a Nintendo 64 game. I can tell you that.
Yeah, Nintendo 64.
Yeah,
game
yeah.
That released in Japan first.
Yeah.
HAL Laboratories. I don't know this studio.
Do you want another clue?
Yes, yeah. Please. I'm pretty sure like half the podcast listeners are yelling at us already.
Catherine, you got Katamari Damacy last week in like one freaking guess. So like you can't get them all.
Okay.
Well, you play as a character named Todd.
Todd.
Todd is his first name. I can't give you his last name.
Well, you can. You just are choosing not to.
It would give it away.
Todd.
How can we persuade you to give us Todd's last name?
You gotta guess the game, man. Guess the game.
Oh, Todd, that gives me like Leisure Suit Larry vibes or Conker's Bad Hair Day vibes.
Oh God, Todd.
Oh my gosh. I don't remember playing a 64 game where somebody's like, "Hi, I'm Todd." It's like.
Well, you play as Todd, so it wouldn't be Hi, I'm you'd be hi. I'm Todd. Okay.
So play as Todd.
All right.
Do you want another clue?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
It is a rail shooter style gameplay.
Rail shooter.
Yep.
As Todd.
Oh, you found a blind spot, like with that other brain teaser game that only you and Pat knew.
Yeah, like Call of Duty.
Like Call of Duty.
such niche
game.
Game
in the world.
Call of Duty is game series in the world. We don't know it.
Again, it shows that we rail don't play shooter. Gun games. A rail shooter yeah. as Tom.
It's a rail shooter style gameplay.
Is it, was this game an arcade? Like a,
I don't think so.
Time Crisis? Like,
no.
Okay.
No. All right. No. Do you want another clue?
How many more clues do you have?
It's so hard because sometimes I come up with these questions. I'm like, they're never going to get this. And then you get it in one freaking thing. And then other times I'm like, oh my God, I have to make this harder because it's going to be too damn easy. Okay. The game was praised for its innovative gameplay concepts and charming presentation, but received some criticism for its relatively short length and limited replay value.
My mind.
What is Todd's last name?
Yeah.
I'm not telling you Todd's last name.
My mind is blank. My brain is smooth.
All right, I'll give you the next one. All right. It's the first console game that allowed players to print their in-game creations with the Nintendo 64's printer peripheral.
Oh my God. You know, if we don't know this by now.
Oh, is it Pokemon Snap?
You got it!
Wow.
Oh my God, we're dumb.
You played as Todd Snap.
Oh my gosh.
I broke Kat. I broke her. You can't see her. She's broken. She can't even breathe. She's laughing so hard.
How can we forget about Pokemon Snap?
Wow.
Oh my God. This is just a testament of how, like, exhausted all three of us are.
The other three clues I have is it features 7 different environments, including a beach, a volcano, a cave, and a river. This is an interesting fact that I learned as I was researching this. There is rumor that there was supposed to be a horror stage, obviously, with the ghost-type Pokemon, based on unused music by a composer, hold on, I want to make sure I say this right. Ikuko Mimori is the name of the composer, because they had created a piece called Fantastic Horror that they had uploaded to their website that was supposedly for this game, but never actually made the cut of the game. Because, I mean, some interesting facts about Pokemon Snap that I learned as I was doing this. At that time, there was 150 Pokemon, 151, right? Because Mew was still part of it. They only had 66 Pokemon in Pokemon Snap. I don't think any of them were the ghost Pokemon, and like, how can you make a whole world around 3 Pokemon, right? So I guess that's why they decided not to do it.
Wow.
And then my last clue was it had a spiritual successor in 2021. New Pokemon Snap.
Nintendo and their naming convention.
Wow.
So yeah, that's Pokemon Snap. Wow. I thought that was going to be a funny one.
Yeah, it was a funny one. I'm pretty sure half the podcast was screaming at us of like, how could you forget?
They were like, Todd Snap, Catherine.
I didn't know Todd had Snap. A name in the game. I forgot. Like, I played 5 minutes of this fucking game.
I mean, let's think about this, okay? We're 2023. It was 1999. It's a long time ago.
We were thinking about the end of the world. We weren't thinking about Todd Snap.
Yeah.
You know? No, we weren't.
We were really...
Maybe we were because we needed a distraction.
From the end of the
world.
Because
all the airplanes were going to go down. The computers were going to go down.
Exactly.
It was Y2K.
Yeah. In case you missed it, if you're younger, like, that was...
That was a thing.
It was a really big thing. Like, people were genuinely afraid that, like, the
people
world
didn't
was going to collapse.
People didn't think that they had the ability or the coded in there to be able to switch that 1 to a 2.
Yes,
and all they did was like find code to like push it back until like 2020, I think they figured or something. Anyway, I think some of it got fixed, but like and like context for myself, the year prior, 1998, was the big ice storm where people didn't have power for 2-3 weeks. So when people were saying, like, Y2K, the grid's going to go down, we were like, oh, fuck, not again, bud.
Here's the thing. We've had, like, Y2K was a thing, and then 2012 when the world was supposed to end. Yeah. Are we just living in doomsday now?
Forever
like,
doomsday.
Is that what we are? It's 11 to midnight or quarter, or, like, something like
that? I think that's why, like, people are, like, as climate change comes and, like, these things, like, brought on by climate change, like the COVID pandemic, they say like with climate change is going to bring like new disease and pandemics, right? And COVID's like the first one of many. And that's why we were just like so numb to it. We're like, yeah, bring it.
Yeah, we're prepared. They've just talked about like our generation. They're like, why aren't you saving for the future? And we're just like, what future?
Yeah.
We're going to live. We're going to live in the here and now because what future?
I'm sorry. It got really dark because of Pokemon Snap.
Oh, we're about. I know. We started really, really happy, and we're gonna go down a dark path now too because apparently Gamergate is back, and I've got questions because I've been a wee bit out of the loop. So we're gonna get into that right after this break. Okay, so we've got like a combined topic of the show / news of the week, and we're going to do this a little differently since I've been so busy with work and a little bit out of the loop, but have been seeing, you know, bits and pieces of this kind of making its way across the internet, plus there's been a lot of pieces published, written articles published about this over the last few days. The girls have been digging into it deeper because they've been a little bit more in the know on the news stuff, so I'm going to ask them tons of questions. Let's get it kicked off. There's like this targeted harassment campaign around this Montreal company, Sweet Baby Inc. And I'm not sure why and what's going on. So Catherine, can you bring us through kind of like the Cole's notes of what's going on?
Yeah. So for some context, Sweet Baby Inc. was co-founded by David Bedard and Kim Belair. And they're basically writers and game designers that worked at places like Eidos and Ubisoft and whatnot. And they do consulting services for video game studios. They do mostly narrative, like storytelling narrative, but they also do other stuff like helping with production, helping with trailers, cinematics. And they also do DAI consulting. You know, let's say you want to write a story about a character who's black from Louisiana. And you don't really have that kind of expertise in-house, you can go through Sweet Baby Inc. and they will find you some people from that community to help you write and represent that character properly. So again, let's keep in mind that this is how consulting work. You, the studio, have an idea and you come with that idea to your consultant so you can do it right. It's not the other way around. Ubisoft, Eidos, EA, Naughty Dog, insert name of studio has to be like, we want to do this. And then they ask Sweet Baby for help. Keep that in mind. Yeah. It's very important to the rest of the story.
So, consulting work is a company that has that specializes in a very unique thing that someone may need that skill set. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're specialists. They're consulting. They're paid money to be able to give the information because they're so highly specialized.
Exactly. And they hold, in general, when you're a consultant, you hold no deciding power. Like, in the end, all you can do is give directions, best practices, what your expert opinion is. But when you send it, like any consultant will tell you, when you send it back to the client and the directors are like, man, we're going to ignore it and do whatever the fuck we want. Anyway, it's just like, well, at least I got paid.
Exactly. They present facts and like what best practices are, what their experience and expertise says. And, you know, a lot of the times then you do what you want with that information because you paid for the information. That's what you're paying for.
Exactly. Yeah. So again, this is not a defense of Sweet Baby. This is just a fact of how that business works. And this is very important to the rest of the story. Because this dude from Brazil didn't get the memo. He needs to be as per my last email so bad. So Cabritus started a group on Steam, basically saying, flagging games that Sweet Baby had worked on in an anti-wokeness campaign. So for them, they basically, they don't want diversity in video games. Boo-hoo.
And what's the name of the group? Or is there, or is it, is this one person that kind of, like, is spearheading
the
this?
The name of the Steam, it's probably, I think it might be taken down.
It has been taken down.
Yeah. So then of the name of the group was Sweet Baby Inc. Detected. So it's very targeted against the studio.
Okay.
And flagged all the games that, like, they self-reported to have worked on and what other people maybe, like, even speculated that they had worked on. And if you didn't want Sweet Baby Inc.'s influence, like, to play a game that they had worked on as a consultant gig, you could go to the Steam page and you could see what games there were.
What games were there? What games have they worked
Alan
on?
Alan Wake.
It sounds like they've worked on
Alan Wake 2, Spider-Man 2, Sable, which I really enjoyed, Rainbow
God
Six
of War,
Siege.
God
of War Ragnarok.
Okay, so like some of the biggest games.
Yeah.
The past few years.
Yeah. There are smaller ones, like I said, like Sable. There's also
Battle Shapers are on their website. Usual June.
Goodbye Volcano High. Suicide Squad. The Crew Motorfest. So, and there's South of Midnight. So this one hasn't released yet, but that's the game.
That's the claymation like one.
Yeah,
right?
That's by Compulsion Games here in Montreal, which is now a Microsoft studio. But it's a story based on, like, culture and mythology
Louisiana?
Of Louisiana in the South and, like, that voodoo child type thing.
Right.
Like, I know I'm probably not using, like, I would need Sweet Baby to help me use better words. But, yeah, it's in the American Deep South, and it's based on the culture of a lot of the Black community there. So very Cajun and Creole. So I'm really excited about this game because it's the kind of stories we don't get a lot of that I want to have.
Right.
Again, this idea came from Compulsion Game, and then they go through Sweet Baby to help to be like, hey, can you introduce us to people from Louisiana? Like, basically, or, you know, help.
And so this group has created this targeted Steam group, which is down now, and is also harassing the company?
Yes, yeah. But like anything, like any kind of campaign against something, it ends up with a harassment campaign where the people who work there are afraid for their safety and their lives. Because that's completely normal, right? No, it's not. It's not. It's
not.
Never okay. Having lived myself through the bomb scare because some kid in France got banned from his Rainbow Six account for cheating, by the way. He cheated and we banned him, and then he decided to SWAT the place I work at. I can tell you that it is fucking terrible. It is 10 out of 10 horrible. Do not recommend. Like, no. And like, for me, that was one day and I wasn't at the office, and it was still like fucking one of the worst day of my career. So never okay. Never. So basically, like, this group they just kind of like found a scapegoat and they're attacking this company. And now a lot of the people that work with Sweet Baby are trying to disinform, basically work against the disinformation.
So the companies that are working, who've hired Sweet Baby.
Exactly. So you've got Gavin Young, who works on Rainbow Six Mobile at Ubisoft Montreal, did a whole thread on it. But in the Verge article, he was quoted to say basically, like, he said, the anti-censorship crowd like to argue that developers should be able to make the game they want without being told to make the changes to please the market, right? Because a lot of the rhetoric of that group is like, they're being forced to change white characters for non-white characters, right? They're like, this is to them, it's quote unquote censorship. But basically, Gavin is saying the anti-censorship crowd like to argue that we should be make the game we want, but if we make a diverse game, then you're calling us for censorship. So the rest of the quote says, believe me, we're trying. We put diverse characters in games because they represent our teams and our friends.
Hmm. So they're essentially saying, no, you're wrong. It's not Sweet Baby Ink that's doing it. It's we are choosing to do that. We want to do it right. So we engage with a company to make sure we do it right.
And having like the type of characters the type of story they make is not them being censored into being forced and shoehorned into doing DEI. They're doing DEI because before they were forced and shoehorned into making stories about white men. Mm-hmm. About making one type of story. Like, if you look at video game protagonists from, like, you know, like, before 2015 and even 2020, mm-hmm. it's just the same fucking military American white dude. Mm-hmm. Like, that's censorship.
Yeah. And those characters, the supporting characters, were, you know, shells of stereotypes, like with no depth, and then butt of jokes that were inappropriate and harmful. Mm-hmm. So it isn't even just the harm that may cause an underrepresentation of a main character, but also what other, you know, supporting characters and what they do, like, as well, and the diminishment of those voices and experiences, too.
Yeah. Hmm. Because, like, statistically, like, cisgender white men still dominate the video game space in terms of, like, making, playing, and whatnot. It's changing, right? But in the end, it's a group like this is basically yelling at another group of people that look like them, but don't necessarily think like them. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very sad because, like, Ash Parrish, who wrote the article on The Verge, she got in that Discord group and she did a thread about it. But basically, she said in that thread, like, that she spoke out in their voice chat, told them out who I was and what was there to do. Someone jumped on me immediately, like, prove your lordy, slay a slur, and started screaming the N-word at me. They immediately banned that guy and apologized. It was, she says, sweet? After that, we had a decent conversation talking about video games and recommendation and journalism processes and whatnot, and they were not being gross. These are normal people. And what makes it sad to me is that camaraderie they feel like they need, they could just have without all the bigotry. They said to me, we just want to be heard. But the most interesting things they have to say have nothing to do with railing against woke games. So it's so sad. So they're people that want to be heard. They're looking for camaraderie. They're looking for a place to belong. And they're screaming at other people that look like them. And they're like, but I disagree. You can find a group to belong without being racist or bigot. Kind of like how this is what Girls on Games is about, right? You know, like, it's kind of like, oh, if you like cozy sim games, you can find a Discord about cozy sim games and talk to other people that like to play the same games. Like, you can go to a Discord where people play a lot of shooter games and you can talk about CSGO and Call of Duty and Rainbow Six. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason to attack other people just to feel a sense of belonging. And this is what, like, irks me about hate groups. It's like, you don't have to hate, or you don't have to belittle. You don't have to be to separate yourself from others to belong to a group. Mm-hmm. Just like how I love playing Dungeons and Dragons, so I found other people to play Dungeons and Dragons. But if somebody comes to me and be like, I don't like Dungeons and Dragons. It's too complex. I don't have the patience. I even tried playing Baldur's Gate 3. It was too much. You know what I like? I like sci-fi. I don't like fantasy shit. I'm not going to bring that person down. I'm going to be like, cool. Hey, I understand. I'm not a big fan of sci-fi, but I heard Mass Effect is amazing. Have you played it, or Fallout? And apparently they're going to do a Fallout. Like, you can find common ground, but you can also agree that, like, we have different tastes. That's okay. And this is where I'm like, maybe getting in my own head of like, I don't understand why you would hate something just because somebody has in a game, there's somebody that doesn't look like you. And as somebody who's played games for a long time and never had somebody who looks like me in them, it feels great to have somebody who finally looks like me. And I'm not like, I'm not saying this like to be hypocritical or saying like, oh, they feel the same. It's just, they've had it for all this time. They've always had it. Every video game was about somebody who looks like them.
Mm-hmm.
And now that it's less about them, they feel cheated. Because maybe not all game is about them. And some games are about me. And maybe some games are about neither of us. They're about other people of other cultures and other sexual orientation and gender identities. Mm-hmm. But like, also, I've spent all my life playing games that aren't with people that are not, that don't look like me, but I still enjoy myself because there is value in learning about other experiences. And like, some of my favorite games is where I get to learn. Like, I fucking love right now, I'm like big on games that talk about the queer experience, LGBTQ love stories. Like, I'm big into it. I'm like, tell me about romance in a different way, because I spent most of my life with these shitty rom-coms telling me that a man needs to save me and that I need to realize that what I want to get is get married and have babies. Like, it's so hard for like straight romance story to break from that because of established studios that want to have the status quo. And again, not the consulting firm, the people who establish and have success and made money off of it, they want the status quo. I'm just like, I'm tired of these stories. Like, I'm tired of this, Grandpa. Too damn bad! You know, like...
Yeah.
So when I see other stories, like games like Dream Daddy, I fucking love Dream Daddy. It's not... It wasn't about me. It was never about me. But at least it was about other people that I've never heard about. It wasn't about some military white dude with a gun. Like, sometimes it's just about the diversity to see yourself or to learn about others. And that was my rant about, like, why these dudes are dumb and they deserve to get their groups taken down and they don't need to engage in literal crimes against people that just got paid to do their job, that got hired by studios to do their job.
Well, and what I find really interesting with these groups, too, is that their feelings and their sense of anger or insecurity are really, and their fear are really what drive their actions. Mm-hmm. Fear of change, fear of something that's unfamiliar, fear of the power, quote unquote, getting taken away. And with this individual, Cabrutus, that started the Steam group, he didn't even play God of War Ragnarok, and he said he wasn't really interested in playing the game, but he just figured that there were decisions that Kratos made in the game that he wouldn't have traditionally done back in earlier God of War games, and so he thought that that was suspicious. And it really didn't fit the character. So then there was this jump made from it's different from what I think should have happened to it's woke culture and it needs to be stopped. So in my mind, it again, like it wasn't kind of grounded in any sort of facts or even him experiencing the game. He just seemed to have taken bits and pieces of what other people have experienced and what his fellow companions were angry about, and then went on this like rampage. And it's interesting because in a interview that I listened to with this guy, because I was like, okay, like I'm going to take one for the team.
Yeah, Joelle really took one for the team because I was
like... You're doing the opposite of what Buddy did, where you're like, okay, if you have something to say, let me hear you
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
Let me hear your side of the story. Like, I guess, like, I give everyone kind of a little bit of my attention to see, like, all right, like, where are you coming from? Let me try to have a sense of, like, empathy and understanding to see where this is.
That's the pastor in you.
It is. it's become very more limited as I've gotten older. But I'll say too, like, you know, in the interview, he kind of started to come across as like a victim of like, this is being, you know, done to me, where I have to accept this different culture of, you know, inclusive language and of character growth, I guess, like you could say. And he's upset that, you know, he's like, I'm being targeted. Like, they want to take my site down and my Discord group down. And like, he isn't assuming any sort of like responsibility or really kind of thinking in any sort of like rational way of how what he's doing is like a good thing, because there's a way he could do this that might actually get traction, like in a real, I mean, to the outside, like looking in, it just seems kind of ridiculous of like, oh, you didn't play the game, you don't even know, you're just upset, and now you've snowballed this into this really horrible thing that is causing and wreaking havoc in people's lives because of like your feelings about it. And it's really too bad. It's really too bad that this gets so much attention and creates so much chaos in people from, you know, a small group who are really loud and really harmful. And so, if you think that maybe there's something to his argument, there's not. I guess in my mind, I can't really. He can feel the way he feels. That's fine, but there's no justification like for his actions or what he's done. From what I can tell,
it's interesting that it's kind of come up now and calling it like Gamergate 2.0. And I know that like kind of some of the ways that it's been titled Gamergate 2.0 and some of the articles and stuff of how it's almost like a spin on it.
Yeah.
Because Gamergate kind of happened in 2014, 2015, essentially 10 years ago.
Oh my God.
Right? And we lived through it. Right. So like it started as, you know, a misogynist online harassment campaign, right wing, you know, folks going against feminism, diversity and progressivism in video game culture. And it kind of snowballed from, you know, false accusations around, yep, you know, like some unethical stuff happening between a journalist and a video game dev. And then, yeah, and then also bringing Anita Sarkeesian into it and what she was doing with her analysis around feminism and how the representation in video games, because like that's where I guess we come at it, being like, we've always been represented a certain way as women, mm-hmm, in, mm-hmm, video game narratives,
as a prize,
being, has to be saved, you know, a prize, mm-hmm, what, objectifying, right?
Yeah.
And then she would break that down in her YouTube videos, which if you ever get a chance to go watch some of those YouTube videos, you should totally go do it. And you know, those folks involved and essentially any woman that was kind of like out, you know, conversing in video game spaces was getting, you know, hate back at them just because, you know, they were who they were, and, mm-hmm, saying, you know, hey, I'm here, I play games too, I enjoy, you know, ones that focus on characters that look like me, feel like me, you know, that I can kind of see myself in. And it's really interesting to see it kind of come back around like this. But it's like that Gamergate felt so huge on all of us. Mm-hmm. And this one being called Gamergate 2 is like giving a little bit of whiplash to me.
Yeah.
And I feel it for that company, which is just a company doing this thing to get so much targeted hate, which has to be absolutely atrocious feeling. Mm-hmm. And I hope that by talking about it the way we are, and also like demystifying what is actually out there, and by us having a conversation about this and breaking it down around what this company does, how all this works out, hopefully educate some folks of why this is bad. The thing is I know that we have cultivated a group of hopefully like-minded thinkers and hopefully inclusive community members as well. So we might be just preaching to the choir, mm-hmm, but at least hopefully that like we're bringing education to this topic, because yeah, Gamergate was not fun. for those of us who take place and like to play video games and are female and felt some of that hate. So I really feel for Sweet Baby Ink and those that are getting this hate, because it's just so unnecessary. And like, as we've always said, if you don't like it, move on.
Yeah, don't play.
Go do something else.
Don't play the game.
Don't do something else. Yeah. There's so much out there right now. Find something that you like. You know, just because one person wants to make something that they're into isn't an attack on you. Go do something else.
Yeah, sometimes it does amaze me because there's things that I still see in video games, and I'm like, well, I don't appreciate that, but I'm not making a big stink about it. I guess it's just like, it's okay. Like, there can be, differences. And like I said, I guess I just, maybe in my mind, I'm like, maybe there is like a rational reason for anything of what's happening. And I'm like, oh, there isn't. Like, he's just upset.
Yeah.
Like, he's just pissed. And so it's like, okay.
It's old man yelling at Cloud all over again.
Yeah. It's like, okay. You gotta wonder if like, this was their, this is his escapism in his way, wanting to feel like, you know, this was built for them. But unfortunately, it wasn't built for you. Yeah. It was built by the creators who wanted to create something themselves and had a story to tell. And it might just not be that you can put yourself in that. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
That's okay.
Because there's tons of other stuff out there.
Many other things.
That you could probably, fit yourself into. If you want
to play. I guess it just is such an aggressive move to try to harm the business. Like, in the art form, like, of the games that this consulting company worked on. Like, it's not even the studios. It's just the consulting company. So there was – I wonder if there's something maybe more personal behind it that hasn't surfaced. But it just seems to me like
it was
you're not going after the studios.
It's basically Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like Charlie with his board of conspiracy in the office and shit like that. Of like, they don't like what they're seeing in games, and they saw this consulting company's like working on these games that they deemed so they were like, it must be their fault. But it's like, if you listen to story of game devs, like just how internally people fought hard to get diversity, like how people fought for Cassandra and Assassin's Creed Odyssey, how people fought at Naughty Dog for Ellie's story. How people fought, like, you know, just to let, or at Naughty Dog, to have, like, Abby story.
Abby,
we can have a flawed woman. We can have a woman be the villain, and a real villain. Like, this is what diversity is to write human characters, and I'm sorry to have to teach this to a lot of people, but women are human. Baseline is, we're all human. So it's just all of these stories of like people fighting just to have a bit of what they feel is representative of humanity in games. Because in the end, like, because media is so much of the United States that everything is whitewashed. And it's just like, but white people are not the majority people on Earth. Like, we're not. We're a dying breed, honestly. And it's like, it's not a good or a bad thing. It's just a thing, like genetics and population and whatnot. Yeah. But it's like, we come from like cold places that is hard to live in. So there's not a lot of population. I don't see how we're supposed to be everybody. Every fucking other character has blue eyes. I'm like, how much of the population actually has blue eyes?
That's a good question, because my understanding is it's the most recessive.
Yeah. Honestly, it's... No, it's to the point where I'm like, where do you keep finding all these blue-eyed people? Like, and like, Leah, you have gray eyes.
No, I have blue eyes. They just change color.
See, you're even more recessive.
Yeah, they change color depending on makeup and whatever. But like, yeah, it's true, though. Like, there's not as many blue-eyed folks anymore, just because of the way that genetics have
worked, there wasn't a lot of them to begin with. Yet when you look at movies and TV shows, Like, the amount of people with blue and green eyes in TV shows is astounding. I'm like, my mom has blue eyes, right? I don't have that many. I see more people with blue eyes on TV than I see in real life.
Yeah, but that's because of concepts of and constructs of beauty. Yeah, exactly. Right? And even that's changed over the years where, like, now it's somewhat voluptuous, but, like, still skinny. And back in the 90s, it was stick thin. And then back in the
1800s, it was, white-centric,
like,
beauty standards.
Plump. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, and we're even co-opting some, you know, pieces from other cultures to turn them into beauty standards, right? Yeah. Like, it's... it's a mishmash. It's a melting pot. It's like a whole smorgasbord of stuff that's kind of been mushed together to say what is considered beautiful, right? But then beauty is really in the eye of the beholder, and the beholder is you. So it's whatever you choose. And hair, we've come full circle. If someone wants to make a game because they feel like they want to make it, then they can make it. And if you don't feel like that's what you want to play, then move on.
And my last point. I don't get, like, you know, that guy that was like, you know, that fixed Aloy. Because he thought she
She had too much hair on her face. Yeah. Zoomed up.
Not enough makeup.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And this guy's like, this is what people want, think beautiful. I'm like, my guy, the two most thirst after characters in Mass Effect 3 was a literal alien. It was Garrus. And it was the chick in a full suit that you did not see her face. Like, it
yeah,
was
but he
like,
saw other things of her.
But, like, honestly, like, do not, like, you're going to come and tell me, you go, like, are you going to do an edit of Garrus for him to be more handsome?
No, he's perfect.
Zach.
You can't change him.
And it's like, and the other chick, she's in a complete space suit, yet people were like, I'm going to tap that.
Yep.
So, like,
yo,
beauty is in the...
And then even not giving Aloy a romance partner till way late in the story was also a big deal. And so, yeah.
It's just, we have a woman. We need a romance. No, you don't.
I mean, I enjoy a good romance.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
But they don't have to be the be-all, end-all of all freaking stories out there. Because that's not how we live our lives.
That's true. Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm glad that we kind of broke this down, because I think it would have, I don't know if I honestly would have taken the time to digest this as maybe it should have.
Well, and that's
gone.
What's hard, so, yeah. Right? Because you're seeing headlines on social, you're seeing titles of stories talking about Gamergate, and that gives us all up in arms, you know, whatever. Yeah. You see about this company, if you don't understand how these types of businesses work, and some people don't, right? The three of us all work in businesses where consulting is part of it. We have hired consultants in all different aspects, be it accessibility, or content creation, or legal, anything, right? Because there are people who have a specialties and expertise, and that's what they do, right? Mm-hmm. You bring them in as, like, hired guns to help you solve a problem, right? And figure something out. And some people may not know how those system works and how things get decided upon. So it's good for us to be able to educate on that. And then also, too, like, to bring light to the fact that, you know, there are cases where, like, not everything is for you. Yep. So,
you know,
go find what you want. Yeah. And you'll find your peeps.
Yeah.
Just go look. You'll find your peeps. There are like-minded people out there that want to, you know, hang and talk and enjoy the same type of content as you. And that doesn't mean you got to hate on others.
Leave other people alone. Just stay. Yeah. You don't have to engage.
Yeah, it's like that cartoon from that... ex-BuzzFeed cartoonist, I forget his name, but it's like, you know, just purse the lips and like, shh, let people enjoy things.
Ugh. Not everything has to be a garbage fire all the time.
It's true.
And with that, it concludes our episode of the podcast. That was... Is it cathartic? To like get that cathartic means to sleep, right?
Lethargic,
when you're like
after a cathartic event, cathartic. You can be lethargic.
Ooh, that's because true. You're like,
there we go. Is. See, language. Yeah. Language. Also, words are just semantics. So, use them as you see
that's
fit.
True.
Interpret them as you will. yeah, that's the end of our show. As always, check out the show notes at girlsongames.ca for links to all the stories mentioned in this episode. We've got a whole slew of them, including Kotaku and The Verge and Mobile Syrup. So yeah, go check all that out. Thanks, as always, Kat, for pulling those together for us. You taught Joelle last week, so when you're on vacation, Joelle gets to try and do it.
First try.
You'll be awesome. If you have the power to rate and review this podcast on the podcasting platform where you are consuming it, that would be much appreciated. Why? It helps with discovery, pushes us up in the rankings, people can learn about us, and if you leave comments, we listen to them, read them, and it helps us build our show. So much appreciated there. As always, I want to thank the crew for being on the panel here with me today and talking about video games, because I love this weekly discussion with them. This is a chance for them to shout out their social media handles, so you can follow them anywhere and everywhere online. Catherine, where can people find you?
I am CSDSBANS, CSDBANS on Twitter and Instagram and Threads and Blue Sky and all the places. But I mostly shitpost on the Girls on Games Discord. I shared, I shared a TikTok recipe that I want to eat so bad. From somebody on TikTok, but yeah, she made like jalapeno grilled cheese with tomato soup. And I went a rabbit hole of her account, and now I just want to eat all the foods. So that's what I post on Girls on Games. It's just
the food on TikTok. I've tried more recipes because of TikTok lately. Mm-hmm. I made this wonderful smash potato one that was fantastic, and yesterday I did a tomato pasta which was dynamite that I will send to you guys. So good.
I made a baked pasta dish tonight inspired by a lot of shit I saw on TikTok, and it was pulled together with like leftover pizza sauce because I made pizza the first day. It was honestly like delicious. US, you can ban TikTok if you want. Us in Canada, we're going to keep the screaming huskies and the good recipes. Thank you.
Make sure to keep sharing them.
VPN, Joelle.
I'll download them to my phone and upload them to the Instagram.
Joelle, where can people find
you? People can find me on Instagram at JoelleLauren87 and on X at Gamer_Comfy. But always creeping on the... we actually have like a food... channel on the Girls on Games Discord where, man, if you can't find inspiration there, I don't know what to tell you. Great things.
Was it today that we taught Stainsby, our mod from England, what maple taffy is?
Yes.
What?
He didn't know.
I missed that today because
he posted a meme. He posted a meme about maple taffy, and he was like, Canada, is this real? And we're like, fuck yeah. Like, you've never had
oh my god.
Like maple taffy on the snow. Taffy. Like, you learn stuff in the Girls on Games Discord.
It's true. We are a wonderful melting pot.
An educational platform, I shall say. I am Leah, you are most social media platforms, but of course you want to know everything there is to know about Girls on Games. You can track us down at The Girls on Games on X and Facebook, just Girls on Games on Instagram and Thread, discord.me/girlsongames to continue this lovely conversation and more, and to get ideas for food. But of course, if you ever need to know anything at all, you can track down at our home base. That's our website, girlsongames.ca. Thank you, Kat. Thank you, Joelle. It's been another lovely week of video games. I think I'm going to go download Dave the Diver and get ready now.
Yeah.
Sweet. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.